is the Talking Tigers Podcast, presented by the Alabama Department of Public Health. Don't wait. Vaccinate. Protect yourself and others against COVID and flu. For more information, visit alabamapublichealth.gov/IMM. Here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers Podcast.
Auburn Men's Golf is closing its regular season this week. The second-ranked Tigers are playing in the Mossy Oak Collegiate in West Point, Mississippi. When Auburn won the Seahawk Intercollegiate in Wilmington, North Carolina, it represented the 50th championship for Nick Kleiner as the Tigers head coach. Kleiner grew up in Gastonia, North Carolina. He played his college golf at Wake Forest. After a pro career, he began coaching at UCF. The 2024 Tigers have won 6 tournaments this season, and 3 in a row heading to Mississippi today. Nick Kleinert is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast, brought to you by Alabama Public Health. Welcome to the Talking Tigers podcast. Very glad to have, and in the middle of the season, Auburn's men's golf coach, Nick Kleinert. Auburn closes in Mississippi before the SEC championships. This comes after Nick's 50th win as Auburn's head coach. War Eagle, glad to have you on the podcast.
War Eagle, Andy. Thank you for having me.
50. That's a lot of wins as Auburn's head coach. Do you have a chance to kind of think back on 50 wins as the Tigers head coach?
You know, Andy, 50 is a lot. It goes back to just having a great university, great support administratively, having great players, and great players make great coaches. And I think it goes to just thinking about all the guys that laid the foundation of what we have today, 2024, and just going back to my first recruiting class in 2010, and I just think back to all those days and how we just kind of plugged away and got better and better and better, and we're very obviously lucky enough to win a lot of tournaments along the way.
The first 3 tournament wins as Auburn's head coach came in 2010. The Tiger Shootout, the Chris Schenkel Intercollegiate, and Jerry Pate.
Georgia Southern hosts the Schenkel. It's a great event they have every year at Forest Heights Country Club, but the Jerry Pate special because he's an Alabama guy. So right. Anytime you collect a trophy from Jerry Pate, it makes you feel good because he kind of cringes, I think, when he hands it to an Auburn person.
Good for him. Your first 2 came in back-to-back weeks. So you did a little research. The first was the Tiger Shootout that Auburn, of course, hosted. The second was the Schenkel. There's a story that goes into the Schenkel. Isn't there, with your assistant coach?
Yeah, there's a great story, actually. So Evan Osteen, which is now with the Acushnet Company, lives out in Dallas, but it was our first year at Auburn. Evan coached with me at UCF, and we came to Auburn, and I just remember those days of working until after midnight every night, and Evan and I lived together for about 6 weeks until my family moved up here, and we were in the bus, and Evan's like, you know, the field's stacked at the Schenkel, as it always is. And Evan's like, we got no chance to win this thing. He's telling this to me, not the players. So that's important, number one. But then he's like, you know what? He looked around and he told the team, he said, if you guys win this week, I'll dye my hair. And the guys were like, arr, arr, arr. You know, like, we're going to win. And he's like, we got no chance. And we come down the stretch that last day, and we end up winning. Then we beat North Florida at the very, very end, and beat Alabama and Tennessee and a lot of really, really good programs. And, you know, that's the first thing the guy said when we got in that van is he called my wife that night and he was like, I don't know what to do. I've got black dye over my hands and my ears. She's like, you're supposed to have gloves on. And, you know, so, I mean, it was just the next day when he came into the office. But, the whole team's kind of waiting just to see what he looks like. You know? So it was great. It was a great memory and something that makes, I think, college sports special.
Did he ever do that again?
He did not. No, he did not. I don't know if that drove him out of coaching or not.
You grew up in Gastonia, North Carolina. What was life like for Nick Kleinert growing up?
I'm very blessed. I got loving parents. I had a brother that played college football. So I got to see him go through the recruiting process. So a different sport, but I got to see him go through that.
Is he older?
He is older.
Okay.
He's 4 years older. Played tight end in college. You know, I grew up about 2 miles from Gaston Country Club. So you had Gaston Municipal and you had Gaston Country Club in Gastonia. That was it for golf. And I used to grab my Huffy bike. I think it was a Huffy. If that rings a bell.
Sure.
Or Schwinn, maybe. I'm not sure. But I used to, you know, get on it and I'd ride to the golf course. My next-door neighbor got me started in golf when I was 9 years old. And I started playing competitively when I was 11. And I was just lucky enough to have success, you know, early on. And I had a great mentor in Bruce Sudworth that still teaches there to this day and taught me how to you know, practice and play the game and you know, help me with my golf swing and stuff like that. And I had a lot of great success and kind of one thing led to another and was able to go on to win the state junior and play college golf.
Did you leave the clubs at the golf course, or did you put them on your back?
No, I left them at the, oh man, I never met, you know, the bad guy was, you know, Walt was, he was something else. You know, he would give us juniors a hard time and he would chase us around the back room, especially if we did something stupid, you know, which we're kids, right? We do something stupid. I'll never forget. I had one of that. I think it was before I was 16, I was probably like 13 or something. I had a cart on the other back in the range. And you know how the green superintendent like piles up all their top dressing sand and all the sand they use for divots and stuff like that on the golf course. Well, I had this cart and I thought it might be a good idea to try to ride over some of these big, which I thought were just dunes. I didn't realize they were
trying to get some air in the cart.
I just remember coming back to the shop and Bruce was in there and he gave me this stare that would probably just burn a hole right through your head so you knew you did something wrong. But it was great times. I would never grow up in a small old textile town and obviously being adjacent to Charlotte, but I wouldn't trade those times. I think life might have been a little bit easier then than it is now.
How much would you play?
A lot. You know, I was lucky to have, you know, Brian Craig that coached at, and is the head coach at University of Kentucky for like 22 years. He's now not coaching anymore, but he played at University of Florida, actually played for Buddy Alexander, which is now on our coaching staff right here. And then I had Derek Smyre played at NC State and Chet Chestnut played at NC State and Morgan Beam played at South Carolina. We had that's all from Gastonia. Joey Denton played at South Carolina and the list kind of goes on and on. And it was just a great golf group, and I got to learn a lot from some of the older guys, kind of, you know, what it takes to practice and then how good you have to be and go out and just learn how to compete too. I think learning how to compete is a trait that is developed at a young age.
When do you have an idea that golf was something that could carry you beyond high school?
You know, probably when I, you know, had a lot of success on the AJGA, which has grown into this massive tour now across the country and into international countries. But back then it was 24 tournaments a year, and I was able to, I think I won 7 times, and I won the North Carolina State Junior when I was 15. Beat a lot of guys that were really good players that I looked up to, was able to beat them and represent, you know, North Carolina and the Carolina-Virginia team matches twice as a junior player. And I remember still to this day playing with Jason Widener, which was one of the greatest junior players ever to come through North Carolina, played at Duke, and he was a U.S. junior champion. And just learning from, like, Jason, and, you know, I knew I wanted to play college golf, and I was able to, you know, to end up at Wake Forest and graduate there, and then I propelled that to a professional career until I was smart enough to get into coaching.
What does it mean to you now that you played college golf at Wake Forest?
A lot. You know, one thing I always tell my guys this too, and I don't know if they ever really listen to it, but one thing they cannot take away from me is that degree. And it hangs on my wall in my office at home. And to this day, I am the most proud of that than anything I ever accomplished on the golf course, because that's something that's earned. I mean, you have to work for it. And getting my degree and playing at a prestigious university like Wake was a blessing, and I'm very, very grateful to this day.
Wake Forest golf is... Boy, there's a legacy.
There is.
I mean, just look at the guys that ended up playing on tour. And, of course, the headliner is one of the greats of all time in Arnold Palmer. How much of a presence was Arnold Palmer and Curtis Strange and Jay Haas, those guys in that program when you were there?
I mean, first of all, some of the nicest guys you ever meet. I mean, Jay Haas, and I still remember, you know, obviously, you know, his brother Jerry is a coach there now, but Robert Wren and Lanny. And to this day, Lanny has been great to me. If I ever need anything, I can pick up the phone and call Lanny, and he'll answer. And, you know, his daughter went to Wake, and she's a good friend of mine, Jessica. And Mr. Palmer wasn't around much, to be honest. I mean, he'd come around about once a year. But you got to see, you just knew that when you put that bag on your shoulder, you're representing those guys.
Right.
Too. And that meant a lot. The list kind of went on. Unfortunately, I was never good enough to add to that legacy. But, you know, everybody finds their place, and my place was in coaching and developing young people.
When did you know, as a pro, that, you know, I might need to take that next step in my life from a career standpoint?
I was 27 years old. I was going to tour school in Tampa. I got married my senior year in college. I remember playing a practice round. You're going to think this is funny, Andy. Playing a practice round, I got in the car with my wife, Susan, and she said, "How'd it go?" I said, "I'm done." She's like, "What?" I'm like, "I'm done. I'm not playing. I'm not going to play. I'm done. I don't want to play golf anymore." And that was just, it was pretty like, pretty clean and dry for me. It was just, I'm finished.
Yeah.
And that was my last tournament. That's a pro.
Pretty final.
I made a decision.
Yeah. Stuck with it.
Stuck with it. You know, but it was probably, you know, at that time, it was just a matter of, you know, it was coming. And I just, yeah. I felt like it was such a grind. I was getting ready to be 28 years old. You know, I was ready for a career path that I just needed to figure out what I was going to do in life. And I just felt like that it was just time for me to do something else.
How did the opportunity to become the head golf coach at UCF come about?
Well, the job opened. Actually, Brian Craig that grew up, as I said, played at Florida and grew up in Gastonia, he called me and said, "Hey, would you have an interest in getting into coaching?" Because he knew I was going to quit playing professional golf. And I said, "Sure." And then Steve Sloan was the AD. Coach Sloan was actually a head football coach at numerous places, I think, Texas Tech and Vanderbilt and Duke and Ole Miss, I think. He was at Duke at the time, and he had recruited my brother and played college football and, you know, did an in-home visit. And I talked to my mom and dad, and they're like, "Well, you should give, you know, Coach Sloan a call, and maybe he'll remember the last name, maybe he won't." But anyway, I called him, and he called me back, and the first question was, "How's your brother? How's your mom and dad?" And I was like, "All right, I got it in." But we talked and talked, and he said, "Why are you calling me?" And I said, "Because I want your golf job." And I knew nothing about coaching. I hadn't followed college golf for the last, you know, 4.5 years once I'd finished at Wake. And anyway, I went in and I interviewed with him, and he offered me the job and you know, gave me my keys to an office that's in a trailer. And I remember the business office calling me like my first 2 weeks on the job and said, "You need a PO number." And I'm like, "What's a PO?" I mean, I knew what a visa was, right? I didn't know what a PO was. But I think sometimes in life, the best way to learn is just do it yourself and figure it out.
How much money did you make as the in your first year as the head coach at UCF?
Well, Coach Sloan said, "I give you $30,000 and no benefits." And he was famous for saying that your next raise will be your next job. At least you knew where you stood, right? Yeah. But Steve, I'll tell you, you know, the first person that called me when I got the Auburn job was Coach Sloan.
Hmm.
And he's an Alabama guy. You know, he's the AD at Alabama.
Right.
And he played quarterback at Alabama. But he was the first call at me, and he said, "I can't believe you took a job at that evil school." But in all seriousness, he called me to congratulate me and just told me that, you know, that, you know, he knew he made the right hire when he hired me, and he just wished me the best. And I thought that was pretty special for me when I got that call.
All right. As a head coach making $30,000 with no benefits.
Mm-hmm.
What was the learning curve like for you on the job in those first few years?
Well, I think first thing, it's never been about the money for me. It was just an opportunity to do what I love. I love golf, and I love being around golf. I love to help young people. I love to teach. I love to coach. I always thought I was going to be a teacher because I always, you know, I was lucky enough as a youngster to work with David Ledbetter some, and I was just always in awe of kind of those marquee swing instructors and you know, what they're able to do, not only with helping people's games, but their marketing skills and things of that nature. And, you know, that never transformed. I started to do some of that in Dallas, and I realized this isn't as much as fun as I thought it was going to be standing out here in 100-degree heat and helping people that can't even hit the golf ball. But so getting into coaching, that learning curve was, it took a while. I mean, I didn't know anything. I'm sitting here calling kids. I mean, I get the job in the end of July in 2001, and we're not very good. You know, I've got a roster of 18 people, and they told me I got to cut it to 9. Okay, so I get to make 9 phone calls that aren't probably the most fun phone calls you get to make. And I've never seen these kids hit one shot my whole life. And I went with the guys that based on what I've been told, that were the right fits for the program. And I remember calling kids and recruiting and calling Kevin Kistner and some of these kids that have been committed to Georgia for 2 years. I had no idea, you know, I just went down the list of who the best players in the country were. And I knew that we probably had no chance, but I learned quickly. And I learned that, you know, what my niche was. And I was at an up-and-coming university. Right. Was really starting to, you know, transform their athletic department and build new buildings. And I think I just called it at the right time. I was very lucky. and very blessed to have that opportunity there.
You were part of that development.
I was,
in that
yeah.
athletic department.
I was, and they had, you know, once Coach Sloan decided to leave and go be the AD at Chattanooga, where he's from, and they brought in Steve Orsini from the Dallas Cowboys, and I'm a huge Cowboys fan, so I hit it off with Orsini quickly. But, you know, he had a great vision. He was a visionary guy, and you know, built the football stadium and expanded the athletic complex, and they built some dorms around the stadium, and, you know, had all these plans for the new basketball arena, and it turned into what it is today. I think without Steve and Dick Nunes, which was on the board there, which was the past president of Disney, I don't think any of that stuff would have been possible. And I just called it a great time, and we hired George O'Leary. You know, I remember talking to Orsini, that, you know, he said, "I got some good news for you." And I said, "What's that?" And he goes, "George O'Leary is going to be our next football coach." And I was really, really excited about that because I knew his track record at Tech, and, you know, I knew what happened with Notre Dame and stuff like that.
Right.
But I thought it was a great opportunity for UCF, and he helped transform the football program to what it is today.
What's the first time you came to Auburn, Alabama?
1994. Played NCAA regionals here back when Auburn was on the quarter system. But I remember we stayed at the AU Hotel. Actually, our coach, Jack Lewis, had a heart attack that week. And,
my. And
we brought in Jesse Haddock, the legendary coach, and he came in and coached us. Jesse was great. I mean, he coached all the greats, the Curtis and Lanny and all those guys. But he was famous for his hour and a half meetings. He would smoke and drink coffee at the same time. For an hour and a half. And if you lost eye contact, he might throw something at you. So when he speaks, you listen. I mean, you don't lose eye contact. But, yeah, they were 90 minutes long. So in that retrospect, my team meetings are a lot shorter. Because I remember that was miserable.
How'd you do in the tournament?
I remember leading. I was leading after the first round. We played at Grand National Lake Course. I think I finished maybe 10th or 11th or something like that. I'd have to get Tucker to fact check that.
Yeah.
But I remember leading up to the first round.
Did Wake advance out of the regional?
We did, yeah, we did. We were lucky enough to play an NCAA championship every year I was there.
Yeah.
War Eagle, it's a great day for Auburn Tigers to get vaccinated. Many children and adults that delayed vaccinations during the pandemic are still behind schedule. It's crucial that we take steps to get everyone back on track with their routine immunizations. Children and teens can still catch up on their vaccinations even if they start late. Make sure you and your family are all up to date on all recommended vaccines, including COVID-19 and flu. Let's all do our part to get back on track. Don't wait. Vaccinate. For more information, visit alabamapublichealth.gov/IMM.
When did you learn of the Auburn coaching job? How?
Oh, God, that's a great question. I mean, obviously you hear a lot of chatter, right? And you hear that Coach Griffin may be retiring. And, you know, I knew, you know, that Mike had been here a long, long time and done great things for the university and for the program. And I got a phone call from David Mines and Jay Jacobs where they wanted to speak to me. And then I asked, you know, our athletic director if that'd be okay. It was Keith Tribble, the athletic director at UCF, and obviously he didn't want me to leave. But long story short is you know, I was able to get a phone call from, I remember I was at Western Junior at the University of Texas Golf Club in Austin and recruiting, and I remember getting a phone call from Jay Jacobs and offering me the job, and I knew that about 3 minutes later I was on the next flight back to Orlando because I had taken the job and wanted to make sure I had a chance to meet with Keith and do it the right way.
What do you think Auburn saw in Nick Kleinert?
I think somebody that has a passion for what they do. I think somebody that treats other people how they want to be treated. To this day, I remember the question that Jay asked me, and he said, if I was in Publix and I met somebody, I'm looking for some groceries, that knew you, what would they say about you? And I still remember that to this day. That I don't remember a lot of the questions, but I remember that one particularly because that one kind of hit home. But I think that somebody just loves young people, that's going to work hard, it's going to do the right thing, it's not afraid to fail, and it's going to put a lot of passion in for the brand.
Here's an observation I've heard from Nick Kleinert.
Is this good or bad?
It's good. And it has come after interviews that you've done, whether it's on the Tiger Tailgate Show or Tiger Talk or something like that. Almost to a person. Well, that dude is confident. He is a confident man about himself and this golf program.
I do believe in my players. I believe in Auburn. I mean, listen, the community, the town, the people, the university, the leadership we have over at Sanford Hall with Chris Roberts and John Cohen now in the athletic department. And I believe in the people that we have in place. I think you can build the greatest facilities in the world, but if you don't have the right people, it doesn't matter. It's all about the right people. And that's what's helped us be able to get the recruits. It's helped us attract the donors. It helped us build what we have today. And, you know, I'm just very thankful, very grateful for the opportunity to be at Auburn and to coach all these wonderful players that I've had the opportunity to coach and meet so many wonderful people along the way, too, that have really transformed my life. To be honest, as much as we transform these young people's life, it's transformed my life. It's just been an unbelievable experience just from a personal standpoint to raise my two daughters here, too. Mm. We've loved living here.
What is the aspect of the job that you have learned the most from those early days at UCF, now to your time at Auburn with 50 wins and championships and opportunities on the national level? What is there one or two aspects of the job that you have learned the most about?
First of all, I learned a lot. I think the most important thing that I've learned, though, which I didn't realize young in my coaching career, was how important relationships are and how important culture is. It's all about culture to me. I don't care if you're running a program of 10 players or you're running a corporation of 2,000 employees. If you don't have the right culture, it doesn't work. And that's something I've learned. It's something I work, you know, both Coach Williams and myself and Coach Alexander, we work really, really hard on that culture. And I think that's probably changed a little bit over time, too. Maybe it wasn't that way back in 2001 as much as it is nowadays. But I know that if you have the right culture in place, if you have the right vision, and you have the right connectivity among the players, and you're going to have success.
Where does that come from for you?
It comes from a lot of different areas. I mean, I think I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot from a lot of mentors that I've had. I think it comes with setting a vision, setting standards, program. I don't have any expectations. People ask me that a lot in the media. What are your expectations for this year? I'm like, there's none. I don't have any. But I have standards in place. I have, you know, if you act like a gentleman at all times, you be on time when time is involved, and you give your best effort, and you have high energy, and you have high enthusiasm on a daily basis. And I think if you have the right standards and they're carried over every year by the senior class, that's when you have something special. And when you have that connectivity, you know, I think you have a more committed team. The more connected they are, and the more they get along, the more they hang out, and the more they embrace each other. And I think when you have that vision that is shared, and we talk about our vision all the time, I think there's a greater purpose when you have a shared vision.
Bruce Pearl talks about recruiting at Auburn. And this past year, there was great culture and connectivity with that team. You didn't see guys that were envious of shots or minutes. But that's not always a guarantee. I mean, you can try and recruit the exact type of golfer, student athlete, person to Auburn. But it's not a guarantee that it's all going to come together. So what is, in your mind, as the head men's golf coach at Auburn, what is the key to that team culture and connectivity?
Well, it's not guaranteed, right? I mean, I know that Coach Pearl talked a lot about this year, how much those guys, or the guys did, right? They talked about, I mean, Jalen and all those guys were talking about in interviews, how much they hang out together and how he used to play video games and now he wants to hang out with his players. But I think, you know, you try to recruit the guys that fit the mold, that fit whatever your standards are and whatever your vision is as a coach, and you try to, you know, talk to players. You know, the guys on my team tell us who they want and who they don't want on the roster too. That's part of it. I mean, I think it starts at the top. You know, it starts with us as coaches to lay that foundation of this is what the standards of the program are. This is how we're going to run things. This is how we're going to act. This is how we're going to do things, whether we're on the golf course or whether we're traveling or whether we're at our facility. These are the standards that are put into place. And here's the vision, you know, and it's not for everybody, you know, like it's to be elite. You know, that's in different areas of your life socially. I think being elite socially is really important. Like, you got to have a social life. You're young. You're 18 to 22 years old. Like, that's something that's really, really important in your life, and it's healthy, you know? And I think you got to be elite spiritually. It doesn't mean that everybody has to be religious when I say spiritually either. It means about serving other people. It's about lifting somebody else up when they're down. It's about encouraging people and inspiring people, you know? And you want to be elite athletically, of course, right?
Sure.
That's one of the reasons why they all came here. I want to win an SEC championship or win an NCAA championship. And then they want to be elite academically, too. There's no reason why we can't be elite academically. You go to class, you be on time, you know, you're sitting on in the first three rows, you take notes, you take your hat off, you put your cell phone up, you know, you act like a gentleman, you act like a student. I don't think there's any issue with being elite in those four areas. And it's not for everybody. You know, and I tell that to recruits. Like, if you don't want to be elite in these areas and you don't want to follow the standards, then maybe that you're not a right fit at Auburn. It doesn't matter what they shoot.
You come from one of the great golf programs as a player in Wake. How much of what you experienced there is now part of Auburn and this Auburn golf program?
I think it's an experience I've experienced, to take it a step further, of my whole life. You know, being how I was raised at home, to watching my brother go through the ebbs and flows of being in the sport world, right? Of being a college football player, wins and losses and things of that nature. And then being around great mentorship as a junior golfer with Bruce Sutterith and people that taught me back in Gastonia. And then getting a chance to play at Wake Forest and, you know, what Jack Lewis taught me. And what some of my best friends to this day were the older guys on the team when I was at Wake. You know, the Hans Albertsons and the Ron Whitakers and all those guys that taught me so much and laid that foundation of what I believe. And then I've taken some of the good stuff that I thought were really good, you know, back when I was in college, and maybe some of the stuff I didn't like, you know, and transformed that, you know, into what I believe in as a coach. And I think I've transformed too. I've been doing this. I've been a head coach for 23 years. Like, I'm way different now than I was, you know, 15 years ago about what I preach and what I believe in.
Your recruiting, has it changed over the years as far as the international game is concerned, and recruiting nationally, internationally? I mean, is that an ever-evolving philosophy?
Yeah, well, it's such a global game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's way more global, especially in the college world. Back when I played in the 90s, you know, we didn't have that many international players in America, but I think the college golf system is phenomenal. I mean, if you look across the country now, especially with, you know, PGA Tour University, which is basically like a draft, the players to get their Korn Ferry and PGA Tour cards, the college system works, and it works across the country. But I haven't done, like, I've had a few international players here and there. Nicholas Carlson was marvelous, you know, he was a marvelous player for us from Sweden, and Yvonne Rabula from South Africa, the British amateur champion. He was a three-time All-American and just a phenomenal player for us. But I haven't done a ton of international recruiting. I don't think I'm that good at it, to be honest. I don't know that space as well, or I'm not maybe as comfortable in that space because I don't know it as well compared to the domestic recruiting. But it's not, I'm not opposed to it. Like, we're trying to recruit the best fits, you know, academically and athletically, socially and spiritually, that we can find, no matter where they are in the world, the right fits for Auburn.
50 wins at Auburn. 23 years as a head coach on the collegiate level. Your most thrilling win and most crushing defeat, the two things that hang with you the most?
That's a great question. I think the most thrilling win, I mean, it would probably have to be the dramatic win that we had in the SEC championship. Wells Padgett made that putt. I mean, I can still remember, I mean, that was a hard putt. I mean, the greens are fast as lightning, and it breaks about a foot and a half, and it's down the hill. And I remember walking on that green and trying to read it with him, and he said, "Coach, I got this. I'm making this." I'm like, all right, you got it.
He hit it. He knew it, too.
He knew it. Right when he hit it, he knew he made it. But he was just a true competitor and just Mr. Clutch. And he was a freshman, and he just had that. He had it in his eyes. You know, he was going to refuse to lose. And that was just thrilling, I think, just because of the stakes, too. I mean, to win the SEC championship. And I think another one, I mean, it may not be thrilling, but it was the next year we won stroke play by 16 shots. A lot of people don't realize that, but that was a pretty dominant performance in 2019, where we just dominated the best league in the country in that event. But the most crushing defeat, I mean, I don't like to think about a lot of losses, Andy. I would say that it had to be Stillwater, Oklahoma. It's about the only time I think we've missed the national championship in maybe 12 years or something. You know, it's been quite a run, which is hard to do. But we were in great position with two holes to play. I think we're in by like six shots. Karsten Creek, yeah we had a, I won't name names, but we had a player that made triple on 17 the last day, and then we had to count his score, and we had on 18s a reachable par five, and we drove it beautifully there, and we had two players hit it, they had four irons in par five, on her second shot. The water's really not in play, Andy. And they both hit it left into the water and made bogey, both of them. And all they had to do was make par and just get it up somewhere near the green and chip it on too. Like it's like elementary, but you just, golf is a crazy game.
Yeah.
And you just never, never know what's going to happen. And we missed my one shot. I don't think I slept that night and, you know, and we're on the next flight out in the morning. And, you know, you've been in tough locker rooms before, you know, it was a tough meeting in the hotel room that night with a lot of tears from a lot of players and, you know, end of some guys' careers and some of them felt responsible. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's sports and you got to pick up and life goes on and you just got to move on to the next one.
Locker room after the Rose Bowl game against Florida State comes to mind for me.
I was in the stands. It hurt watching. Are you kidding? If that guy doesn't fall down, we win the national championship. I mean, you know, I say we, but
that's all right.
But yeah,
but it is we.
Yeah, it is.
It is, isn't it?
It
I mean,
is.
But and you
part
say,
of it.
You say that, and for those that are not part of the Auburn family, it's hard to understand what the Auburn family is, not only to fans, but to student athletes, to alums, to coaches, that while they're here, it is we. And it's not just at the Auburn University Club or Neville Arena or Jordan-Hare Stadium or Plainsman Park and Jamie Moore Field or the Auburn Soccer Complex. Mm-hmm. It is we.
It is.
You share in the wins, and you suffer with the losses. You're a part of it. And I would think as a head coach, you know what that feeling is like, that elation of a big win, and you know how tough it is when a team loses a match or a game that it should win.
It's tough.
Yeah.
You get lost for words.
Yeah.
What to say, because there's nothing you say that's going to make them feel better.
Right.
But you probably put it, listen, you're teaching life lessons, and you try to put it in relative to life and you know how things are going to be tough, and you know, you got to pick up and move on. But you're right. It is we because, listen, the more games they win in other sports,
right,
the better we do. The better recruiting is. You know, we need football and basketball and baseball and all those sports that all of our recruits watch to win games. There's no doubt about it.
As this podcast airs, you're playing your final regular season tournament in Mississippi. Then the SEC championship is next. So I will close out this podcast today with this question. What is next for Auburn Golf? What is next for Nick Kleinert as the head coach of Auburn Golf?
You know, obviously we got one more regular season event and then we go into postseason play, and I just can't be more proud of this team. I mean, I think we're 117-4. You know, my best team I've ever coached lost 12. They had 12 losses on a year. I think that was back in like 2011-12, we were ranked number one in the country. But they, you know, this team is just, they're so connected, they're so together, they're so talented. It's just a matter of figuring out who our best six players are, which I think is a challenge for the coaching staff right now. And what's next for me is just keep on coaching, keep on recruiting. And I'm always thinking down the road, and my mind thinks about recruiting every day. Every day. There's not a day that doesn't go by I don't think about recruiting, or there's not a night that doesn't go by where I'm looking up results and just trying to figure that out. And then, you know, obviously personally, I got my two daughters at home, and when I was looking at, I got to do campus tours. I'm instructed I got to do
goodness.
College campus tours, so she's getting ready to be a senior. And we've already done two, and we got, I think, three more to go, and Auburn's one of them. So,
talk about your family.
Yeah, I've been married for 28 years. So she put up me for 28 years. It's hard to believe. I think she says you're gone 5 months a year working and recruiting, so that's how we stay together. But no, I got two beautiful daughters. Peyton's in ninth grade and Chloe's in 11th, and they're just great students and can't brag enough about them. And one's an artist, and she didn't get that from me because I draw stick figures. Nobody wants to be my partner when we play those games.
You grew up with your wife, but you were not high school sweethearts.
Nope. I think she had a high school boyfriend. I had a high school girlfriend. So.
Enough said there.
But no, we started dating in right before sophomore year in college and got engaged senior year.
Talk about your staff.
Chris Williams, he's just stand-up guy and former number one player in the world in amateur golf. He's a Walker Cupper. He's a four-time All-American. But more than just all the golf accomplishments, he's a great person. You know, him and his wife Liz are just great human beings, and we're very blessed to have them at Auburn. And then you got Coach Alexander.
Whew.
I mean,
what a resource.
What a career, right?
Yeah.
I mean, 27 years at Florida. I think he coached 36 years total. And to have his wisdom and his expertise, I mean, he's old school. Like, he'll tell you his opinion, which I like. You
know? Hour and a half meetings?
No, they're short and sweet because he's like, I got to go to lunch. Chris and I will work right through lunch. He's like, I'm not missing lunch. But he's been just a wonderful resource. And, you know, I've known Buddy since I was 16 years old. Mm. And I know how great a player. He's former U.S. amateur champion, too. So he's been a blessing to have him and his wife, Joan, as our director of ops as well.
Congratulations on 50 wins. I hope there are many, many more.
I hope so, too.
In your future. Thank you for joining us today. War Eagle.
War Eagle. Thank you.
For Nick Kleinert and the Talking Tigers podcast, brought to you by Alabama Public Health, I'm Andy Bertram. Be strong and be courageous. War Eagle.